The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but the Christians you meet are so stuffy and so legalistic. They have rules about everything. Some of them believe it's a sin to dance. Some of them believe it's a sin to drink. Some of them even believe it's a sin to go to the movies. Well, yes, some Christians hold to this type of legalism, but for most Christians, it would depend on the type of movie. Be that as it may, let me introduce a man who always goes to the movies, be they sin or be they not sin, film critic Mark Boobie. And Mark, welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me again, Bob.
It's always good to have you. And actually, Paul Drivas, who many of you who listen to KCBQ know, he's been on the air, you at least hear him referred to a lot by me and Rick Amato and other hosts. Paul is a big movie fan. Some of you will recall over a year ago when Mark and I did a special show after the finale of Lost, Paul came in and joined us. So Paul's going to be chiming in because he's seen some of the movies that Mark's talking about. How you doing today, Paul?
Pretty good. I've actually seen a lot of the movies he's going to be talking about. I think I've seen everything. So
okay. Well, I mentioned to him that you said you hadn't seen Winnie the Pooh, but you probably wouldn't admit it if you had seen that one.
No.
So, okay. Well, anyway, Paul, you just chime in because I've seen some of these movies. I haven't seen all of them. I'm the kind of guy that'll probably have an opinion even if I haven't seen it, but I should shut up about the ones I haven't seen. Anyway, Mark, what are the things you're going to be reviewing for us today?
Oh, you want me to make the list right up front and
give
it,
well, give
the
us
surprise,
the list.
Huh?
That gives them something to look forward to.
No.
That way, if you only get to two of them, which is sometimes the case, at least they heard a list. At least they heard what our intentions were.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, let's see. I've got Transformers, Super 8. More Transformers. Lots of Transformers.
Oh, you mean you're going to go back and review
Cowboys
some of the previous?
Cowboys and Aliens.
Have you seen Cowboys and Aliens?
Yes, of course.
When did it premiere?
It came out Friday. It premiered this week.
Oh, I thought it wasn't coming out till next weekend. Boy.
Fortunately, it was this week, so I got
okay.
to see it.
Okay, Michael Medved gave it a terrible review.
Of course, I'll be
interested to hear what your review is.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised he doesn't. I've never heard him give a good review now that I've been listening to him.
Oh, no, he gives a lot of good reviews.
Then I just don't listen at the right times, apparently.
He only gave it 2 stars out of 4.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm not surprised. He's a tough critic. That's just the way it goes. I mean, you know, when you're paid to be a critic, you can be a tough critic. I'm a nice critic. They should pay me.
Well, you know what? When you love a movie, you're very nice to it. When you don't love it, but of course, it's more fun to be a critic when you don't love it.
Right, that's probably right.
I've written a few reviews on my website, and boy, it is more fun to rip a movie to shreds.
And it's easier, to be honest.
I know, I was thinking some film critics that do it for a living must be frustrated because when the movie's good, the onus is on the people that created the movie. When the movie's bad, the critic can be creative to mention right. that it sucks rags with two straws and other colorful little metaphors.
That's true. Well, you know, the funny thing is last year I hardly came on during the summer because the movies were so bad and I just didn't, it's not that I didn't want to say bad things, it's that I just didn't even want to see the movies because they were so bad. So yeah, last year was a terrible year and it ended up being that the only reason there was any money to show at the end of the year for the box office receipts was that the animated films took up the slack of the live action films. So the five of the top earners were animated films, and that's never ever happened in history before. So last year was an awful year. This year is a great year. And so there's a lot of movies to see. That's why I've got a list. Like when you ask me to make a list, I'm thinking, did I write down everything I've seen? Because I've seen so many things.
So have we heard all of them? We kind of stopped at Cowboys and Aliens. Are there more besides Cowboys and Aliens?
Captain America, and I reviewed some movies previously too, so we can maybe do some overlap. I don't know. We'll see. Let's see how far we get.
All right. Well, let's dive in.
But this has been a good year. I mean, to show you how good of a year it is, this is such a good year that they actually even went back and showed Lord of the Rings again in theaters.
And it was the extended DVD versions that they showed in theaters.
No. You got to say the right thing. The Blu-ray versions, because that's the reason they released them. They were advertising the Blu-rays.
Did you go back and see them?
I didn't see them in the theaters. I got the Blu-rays to watch.
Now, while we're on that, you were a big fan of the Lord of the Rings books.
But not the movies.
I went with you to all three movies. I do remember you liking the first one. From Two Towers on, you didn't care for them.
He ruined some of the great characters in the movies, and I just couldn't get over that because there were so many wonderful characters because it was such a rich text to explore, and he really wanted to focus on the hobbits as opposed to the other secondary characters, and those characters had so much really to offer.
Do you mean he didn't develop them as well as the book, or did you mean that he changed the character?
Them. Okay, he developed them to a point where they could not be heroic, because the hobbits had to be the heroes. So he was afraid to give heroism where it was due. And I think that would
have had
Tolkien.
Except for Aragorn. I mean, Aragorn was certainly
Aragorn,
the dwarf.
And
I mean, some of them were heroic.
Some of them, yeah. But Treebeard is my favorite example, who was I think, one of the great favorites of the Lord of the Rings.
And he looked a little better character than Babes in Toyland's version of a talking tree. You got to watch the Babes in Toyland version and then look at Treebeard. And you'll think you're living in another stratosphere.
Right. Now, he did look good. I will give him that. And it was a very well done, character design. But just the way the character acted was completely opposite of what he was in the book. And so it was very frustrating to see that change come about.
Because you're seeing this great technology and this great animation, and yet it's not being true to the character.
Not being true to the characters. Because you can throw as much technology as you want, but if you don't have a good character or a good story, it doesn't mean a thing. That's really the lifeblood of every movie is going to be its story. That's what's going to get people to go see it and go enjoy it. You can throw as much technology as you want. You can make it the best, most awesome special effects you've ever seen. But if the story isn't great, people just aren't going to like it.
Well, and that was one of the strengths of The Lord of the Rings, where the hobbits were well acted, particularly in the looks on their faces, because if you believe the characters, you believe the story. Now, as I understand it, because I read the books years ago in high school, so I did read them, but I don't remember them. Sam in the third movie, Return of the King, when Frodo sent him home because Gollum fooled him into believing Sam wasn't on their side. I understand that was not from the book either. Is that true?
I don't even actually remember that in the film.
Oh, well, you blocked it out. It was such a painful experience for you. Your mind blocked it out.
That certainly was not in the book.
Maybe under hypnotherapy we can retrieve that.
Yeah, but it inspired me to I'm rereading the books right now. So.
Are you enjoying them as much as you did the first time?
Yeah. I've read them probably 6 or 7 times, so it's just they're such good books and so fun to read, and there's so much there to take from them.
And such a fascinating project. What a brilliant writer J.R. Tolkien.
He was. It's very humbling to read his
work. I'm spending all this time on Lord of the Rings because I didn't see a lot of the movies Mark's going to review.
Speaking of movies.
I did see a couple of them. I guess we should get to the movies.
Well, actually, though, I prepared this other movie because I thought, Bob's asked me every show I've done if I've seen True Grit. And I have every time, I haven't seen it. So this time, I've actually seen True Grit. I made sure to see it before coming in.
The new one.
Right. I got the Blu-ray.
Did you like it?
And it was great. Yes, very well done. It was as good as I had hoped it would be.
It really
if not
was.
Better. Yeah.
It was a very good movie.
Yeah. And what I think, for people that haven't seen it, a little bit of a spoiler is the title True Grit is not about Jeff Bridges' character, Rooster Cogburn, who was previously played by John Wayne. He's the person with True Grit. That's true. But the character that really had True Grit was the girl, the female lead, the young girl, and her name's Maddie in the film.
She was an excellent actress.
And she was amazing
in
this film.
Because she underplayed. You hate it when an actor overplays, it's so obvious, but she just, in a subtle, underplayed fashion, she became that persona.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, the Coen brothers, every actor I've ever seen that's done a Coen brothers movie, no matter what point they are in their career, like Paul Newman near the end of his career, one of the best acting jobs he ever did was in Hudsucker Proxy. So you know, any actor that comes into a Coen Brothers project, you're going to see them doing some of their best work. And this little girl stood up to some of the greatest actors alive today. Jeff Bridges, Matt Damon, Josh Brolin. She was on par with all of those guys. And I think she's like 10 or 11, maybe 12.
Of course,
12.
She was replacing Kim Darby, who did the original one. And that was an easy act
to follow. Well, but she was good. We could even just totally forget that other movie and focus on her. On Hailee Steinfeld on her own. Yeah, Kim Darby was awful. That was awful. You wouldn't even come
away
thinking
for a remake, scene by scene, it was pretty much the same story. I didn't see much difference between them, although definitely better acting.
It was, you know what? I haven't seen the original in a while, but since Glenn Campbell wasn't in it, I think that also made it a lot better.
I have to admit, I am a big John Wayne fan. I don't think you like John Wayne quite as much as I do.
No, he was good in the movie. It's too bad that they didn't have people in True Grit originally that were up to par with the other characters in the story.
I'm a big fan of the Duke.
So. Yeah, he's very good. And one of the things I liked about the film, too, is that it really brings this notion of justice right to the forefront. Now, she wants revenge for the death of her father. That's what she's looking for. She's hiring Rooster Cogburn to get revenge for the murder of her father. But it's justice because she knows who committed the crime, and she wants him brought in and hung, put that. And that's the penalty in the Old West. She doesn't want him shot dead. She wants to bring him in and have him hung. Now, what's really good about this movie is the West is depicted as very brutal and very harsh. And in this context of brutality, there's still this notion of justice, this deep-seated desire that there should be justice and that we want justice. And why would that be? I mean, there's no reason for it. It's the Old West. It's a lawless land, a land where, you have to go hire Rooster Cogburn to get justice for you. What's the motivation for that? You could be as cruel and terrible as you want without really any consequence in most circumstances, and yet people still want justice. So I see that as God having written that on our souls, so to speak, that we desire justice. That's one of the aspects of God's authoring of our humanity.
And isn't it interesting how even people that'll sometimes have politically correct views of the attorneys suing the police department at every turn, when they're actually watching a movie, they love Dirty Harry. They love seeing the guy get slapped around. They love hearing Clint Eastwood get, "I'm all broken up about that guy's rights." I mean, they love that. But I think sometimes that reveals how they truly believe. In fact, I know people that would say, I've talked to atheists who say there's no such thing as good and evil, and then I ask them what their favorite movie is, and they say Lord of the Rings. Well, I just don't understand how that could be somebody's favorite movie. If you don't believe in good and evil, what is there about that movie?
Right. There can't be, because that movie is predicated on the existence of evil. If evil didn't exist, the ring wouldn't matter. I mean,
the arts reveal our Freudian slips. I'm here with film critic Mark Boobian. You are listening to The Bob Siegel Show. We will eventually talk about some of the movies that were released this summer, although the Rooster Cogburn one that's released on Blu-ray. So that's one you could go see on Blu-ray. We're going to talk about some films that have opened in the theaters when we return.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
Some more beautiful.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with film critic Mark Boobian. So you've seen finally True Grit on Blu-ray.
Finally, yes.
And you liked it?
Very much so. Like I said, it was a great movie. Now, you want to get into some of the modern movies. Now, when I was on the show last time, one of the things I had noticed in some of the films I was reviewing then was there was the theme of revenge that sort of played through several of the movies that I covered. Pirates of the Caribbean, the Kung Fu Panda movie, X-Men First Class. Immediately after the show, the week of the show, Super 8 opened, which is the J.J. Abrams movie.
Which was a very good movie.
Yeah, you liked it more than I did. But what's interesting about that movie, it's followed again with this thematic element of revenge, where it's about an alien. You kind of don't find that out. I mean, it's obvious, I guess, from it, you know, it's an alien movie, I think, going in, but it's about an alien who's...
Well, they give so much away in the previews.
Yeah.
You know it's an alien movie.
You don't really
anyway.
See him until, you know, that's sort of the Spielbergian thing, but...
But then it's J.J. Abrams isn't going to give you a masterpiece theater either. It's going to be something science fiction.
Yeah. 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 So anyway, the alien is bent on destruction, and he's fighting the army, and, you know, he's trying to rebuild this ship, and he's capturing people and left and right and putting them in cocoons. And there, you know, there's references to many movies and things like that in some of the things he does, but he's really bent on revenge. He wants to get back at the army for capturing him and keeping him prisoner for no reason, except for the fact that he's an alien. They want his technology. Obviously they're the evil army that wants to build weapons from his technology. So he is going to get back at them. And the final sort of resolution of the film is him letting go of his revenge. And the scene that it happens in is actually very subtle, very calm, very quiet, very beautifully done. It goes by in just an instant, but it's so well acted and so well performed. It's just a great moment in this movie. And the alien just releases all of this anger and hatred, and he literally gains his freedom by letting go of revenge. So I find that a very curious thing that we've seen that as sort of a continuing theme at the beginning of the summer, this notion of revenge and how bad revenge can be for you as a person in a thematic sense.
Now, let me ask you a question, Mark, because you just contrasted two movies, one where the sense of justice was what makes the audience feel good, but then the other one that's against revenge. Now, I know we got into a little of this last time because there's a difference between justice and revenge. I think sometimes people blur the difference. So maybe
right.
You could comment on that. Why did you love justice in True Grit, and why would you have preferred, as J.J. Abrams would have wanted you to see, letting go of vengeance in Super 8?
Well, that's a very good question, and I think it's a very hard line to walk, the line between justice and vengeance. And, you know, I don't actually have a 100% satisfying answer, because it is every situation is going to be different on what we see as justice and revenge. But I think revenge really comes down to your heart. If you're out there to get back at that person, to get them, stick it to them because they've harmed you, and you're angry and hateful, and it's your attitude and what you're thinking and feeling at the time, that's what separates justice from revenge. Now, you can want you can have that attitude and want justice, but it's still bad for you because your heart is very darkened and harmed by whatever wrong has been done to you. In Super 8, the alien is just destroying everything. He's trying to kill people. He's wrecking everything. He is so full of anger. And even though his anger is justified to some extent, it's tearing him apart. He has no freedom. He can't let it go. He can't release it. Now, the difference is in True Grit. Now, there is a moment where the girl has her catharsis, and I would say that there's a sense of vengeance in that moment, actually, as depicted in the Coen Brothers film, and I think that's a strength of the movie because it doesn't make it really clear-cut, but I think for her, she lets it go at that point, that it's not tearing her apart. It's not eating her up. It's not destroying her.
But she's still glad to see it take place.
Right. She wants that justice, but it's not eating her up as a human being. Now, if she didn't get that justice, maybe it would have, but obviously the story didn't go there. So I think that's the difference. It's how we respond as human beings that separates justice and vengeance. But again, it's a very complex issue, and there's a lot more to it. But just in these examples, I think that would be the answer I'd give you.
Okay, Paul, you saw Super 8. What did you think of it?
I thought Super 8 was very well done. I'm a big fan of J.J. Abrams. Most everything he's ever done, I've been a big fan of. I didn't quite see the alien motivated so much by vengeance as much as Mark did. I thought he was more motivated in just trying to get home.
Right, that was his ultimate goal, but...
Unlike E.T., he wasn't just phoning home.
Which is a funny good reference, because the movie was very Spielbergian.
I did think it looked very Spielbergish. I had heard that it was Abrams, and then when I saw Spielberg's name in the credits, that didn't surprise me that he had his hand in it.
It was an homage to Spielberg in a lot of ways, and that's one of the things I did not like about the movie, but not when I was watching it after the fact, when I looked back and... Oh, wow, there's a little too much Spielberg here and here and here and here. And it kind of started, okay, I didn't like these things about it. But when I was watching the movie, it kind of went by and I liked it.
Well, Spielberg's fantastic visual director, not always well-developed characters, but then Abrams is good with the characters, so... I thought they made a good collaboration.
It was definitely a good marriage between both of their strengths in that movie. It was just all around a very good, well-done movie.
Yeah, I agree that it was well done, though, even though I have my problems
with it. Yeah, and I wanted to ask you, why you said you didn't like it as much as me. What disappointed you about this movie? What were you expecting?
I just mentioned about it being, it's a little too wide-eyed homage to Spielberg.
So the Spielberg elements would be why you didn't like it as well.
Yeah, he incorporated a little too much of that into the film.
Okay.
That it's paying too much, you know, tribute to Spielberg and not being enough of an Abrams movie. That's not to say it's not an Abrams movie. There are some great scenes in the film that are obviously
the kids
J.J.
were
Abrams
good actors.
Touches.
A lot of times they have kids in movies who don't act like real kids. These kids were believable as kids, and I thought that was a big strength in the movie.
Now, to answer the question about the alien's motivation to get home, that's what he is trying to do, but that the thing that's keeping him from going home is that he's wreaking havoc on the town. He's not going home, not until he finally releases his desire for vengeance. Not until he stops. He has to stop wreaking havoc to finish his ship and take off. And that's holding him back. So that's why I saw it as a film about vengeance, once you having to let go of vengeance in order to gain freedom. Literal freedom.
When we saw that bicycle go flying in the air, that was just too much Spielberg.
Oh.
that was just taking the cake.
What's that? I don't even remember that. I just thought there were so
many.
It
wasn't really there. I just said that.
Now, Spielberg actually has produced more movies this year than any other year in his career. And he was at Comic-Con and he actually...
Oh,
that
he was
why
at the
he
San
was
Diego
at Comic-Con? Yeah, he came the first time he ever came.
Wow.
But because he's producing all these movies and he wants to advertise them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Transformers, he actually also produced. Cowboys and Aliens, he produced too. I wouldn't be surprised if he had some hand in Captain America, but I don't think he did.
Dare I ask, was our good friend Tim Farnsworth at the Comic-Con? Does he go to...
No, he did not, because it's too crowded for him. That's his reason for not going.
Okay.
And it is crowded. You see pictures of it, and it is wall-to-wall people, literally. So I've never gone. I don't, you know, but I've seen the press pictures, and I know it does get very crowded there. But apparently it's very fun, too. So hopefully someday I'll get to visit.
Okay, so you would recommend Super 8. You thought you saw it as a flawed movie, but you would recommend it to people.
Yeah, sure, I would. It was well told as a story, even though it's a little too Spielbergian for me. And
there's a term, Spielbergian.
Yes.
Okay, that'll be in future dictionaries.
I hope so. Yeah, well,
it's a little too Bergian for me. Okay.
Yeah, that's just to make me sound like I know what I'm talking about.
These intellectuals talking about, like reviewing modern. It's a little Bergian,
yeah.
A little Picasso.
Kafka-esque, that was the that's the other one. That's Woody Allen gets that one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so well, let's move on to Transformers, since that's a Spielberg production.
Hey, now I
so
saw
to
this one too.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I thought it was okay as far as they go. I'm discovering something about action movies, though. I'm liking action movies less and less. Even when the special effects are good, and they were very good. I'm finding that when the action's just nonstop, almost from beginning of the movie to the end, after a while, it does very little for me. When I don't think the characters are particularly well developed. Also, wasn't that kid the same kid that was in Indiana Jones?
Shia LaBeouf. Yes, it was.
Yeah, I don't think I'm not sure that if he'd gone to acting school with Laurence Olivier, Laurence would have worried a whole lot. He just doesn't seem like the best actor.
I don't know. I like him in the Transformers role because he's funny. And
he was better in that than he was in Indiana Jones.
Yeah, because Indiana Jones was a little too serious for his charisma, his character. He comes from the Disney Channel, actually. I know him from a TV show that he did called Even Stevens, which was a comedy, and he played the younger brother. And he's funny on that show, and he it rolls perfectly into the Transformer role.
Well, Mark, you're my friend. If you think he's a good actor, I won't press the point because I'm in an exceptionally good mood today.
Okay, well, thank you, Bob. I liked him.
But I'll stop.
That's okay. I mean, in this particular role, I think as a comic actor, he is very good, and I think I would like to see him in other roles.
Now, we probably would both agree that the Victoria's Secret model in there couldn't act her way out of a wet paper bag.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, you know,
probably seeing her in a wet paper bag was the only motivation the producers had for putting her in the thing.
Right, yes. The very first scene of her is her walking up the stairs and the camera at butt level.
Okay.
Yes, that's the opening scene with her. Thank you.
Why are you in this movie again? We're talking in circles around FCC regulations.
Yes, I was trying to find the right word. That one passes, I think. So, yeah, I mean, okay, so Transformers is a tough movie to review because I like it and I hate that I like it. It's like it makes me understand.
Did you like the toys when you were a little kid? The Transformers?
No, because I'm too old for the Transformers toys. I'm a little.
Those were my favorite as a kid.
See,
okay,
I love the Transformers toys.
Now, when the movie says collaboration between Hasbro Company and something else, you know it's a toy made into a movie.
Yeah, well, there you go. But you know, come on, Pirates of the Caribbean was good. Who would ever think a ride could be made into a movie? So
Paul, you like the Transformer movies too, in addition to the toys?
I really liked the first one. I thought the first one was very well done. Then I thought the second one was just an abomination. I hated the second one. And the third one, a little bit better, but I kind of have this strategy with Michael Bay movies. When I go into the movie theater, I kind of turn my brain off and just expect cool special effects and cool explosions and not much in the terms of character development or plot.
Which is basically what you have to do.
And Mark, you don't like Michael Bay, so I was surprised when you told me you liked this one.
Like I said, it's a guilty pleasure, and I am very guilty. I'm going to be confessing.
Since this is a Christian show, you're freely confessing that you like this.
Because I'm very guilty.
Well, Abraham Lincoln said he'd never trust a man without any vices. So this is one of your vices. Yeah. You like Transformers.
Right. He must really trust me now.
Okay, cause... more vices, more movies, more radio, more Bob Siegel Show with film critic Mark Boobian, and we'll be right back. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Always good to be with you in our new Sunday evening time slot of 6 o'clock. Happy to introduce to our 6 o'clock audience somebody who's been a good friend of this show for many years. His shows are always popular. I can tell by the downloads off my website. It's always good to have film critic Mark Boobian. Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you very much, Bob, for that glowing recommendation. I really appreciate it. So, speaking of guilty pleasures, now, Transformers, you know, it's one of those movies, again, that's just sort of... It's sort of hard to recommend to people because it's such a guilty pleasure.
It's hard to recommend to people.
Yeah, of course for you, Bob. You're a little harsher critic than me when it comes to Transformers
movies.
Oh, boy,
I think we have different tastes, but I think we're equally harsh critics. I'm not going to let you get away with that one.
You're right. Okay.
When you don't like something, you show no mercy.
All right. You're actually right about that. I'll give it to you.
It's almost one of those vengeance things when you don't like it.
Right. I have to. But, yeah, that's but, why but I have to
when
confess.
When I don't like it, I can be ruthless. I thought Transformers was okay.
Yeah.
I did think it was okay.
Well, now let's look at the title. The movie is called Transformers Dark of the Moon. Now, this tells you what you're getting into right up front. The movie is about Transformers being found on the dark side of the moon.
Now, that part of the story actually was kind
Except
of interesting that there'd been this hush-hush.
I agree. I thought that was cool.
That
but
was kind of interesting.
The movie is called Dark of the Moon, not Dark Side of the Moon. Dark of the Moon
and there
is
was a
when there's a new moon, the phase
oh,
of the moon, the new
right.
moon, when it's dark.
Plus, there's a very famous Broadway play called Dark of the Moon, which is about
okay.
witchcraft and has nothing to do with Transformers.
Yeah, right. Well, it has...
I throw these little things because I figured the extra information might be useful, even though it didn't seem particularly useful just then.
It doesn't help this title any. So they've totally mistitled the movie. It's the wrong title for the movie.
I did not...
It was titled by Michael Bay. Go figure.
Exactly. So yeah. you know what you're getting
Michael,
into right
Michael, you
up
just
front.
Direct the movies. Let somebody else come up with the title.
And write the script.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Script? What script?
So, okay, so the other thing is that we already talked about a little bit is his view of women. Now, in the second Transformers
oh,
movie...
Oh, I saw his view of...
Yes,
or
right.
The view
the
of
view
the woman. Yeah.
Of women. But he fires Megan Fox, an actress, and then he hires a model to replace her. Not an actress, a model. He's very misogynistic in his view of women. And the last movie, the previous movie... Oh, I can't remember the
title. Revenge of the Fallen.
Thank you very much. Revenge of the Fallen, the women are like strippers the whole time. That they are purely sex objects. That's the only role
they
really play.
That is horrible. Which one was this? No, just kidding. Yeah. Not going to go see it.
Yeah. So, I don't even understand why there's no backlash against him for that reason. Because the way women are depicted, it was so bad in that movie that it's just... No feminist could ever walk out of there and go, wow, that was a good movie.
This was number three?
This was number three. The one I'm talking about now is number
two. I saw
two.
The first one. I know I missed number two. I didn't know if there'd been even more. So this is, okay.
Right. So
there's only been three.
Now, fortunately, the opening scene is really the worst. The opening scene with Rosie Huntington Whitney, the model, that's the only really bad sort of womenist objects scene in the film. So I was actually very surprised that he didn't pursue that as much. And I think I think it was to the benefit of the film, definitely, that it's not all women are sex objects the whole time and you're not banged over the head. And also the thing I liked about the movie was I saw it in IMAX. This movie sounded amazing. The best sounding movie I have ever heard. Absolutely. Just in the IMAX theater with the subwoofers and the extra speakers and everything, the theater shaking and rumbling. And
now you
and
saw it IMAX in 3D? Was it 3D?
In IMAX
also?
3D,
okay.
Yes. And
I didn't
see
it in IMAX
was also
or
3D.
Good.
Yeah, it was only in IMAX for the first week because Harry Potter bumped it out of IMAX. But it's too bad because this movie is really an extravaganza of a film. It's a movie that you go to the theater to see a movie for. The visual and the audio experience is really on the big screen. That's what you want to see. A popcorn flick in the truest sense, I think. Now, in terms of Christianity, what's interesting about the movie I'm criticizing, the previous Revenge of the Fallen, there were some really direct references to Christianity. There's a death resurrection scene in the film. And if you're not sold on that, there's a moment where Shia LaBeouf is actually splayed out as though he's on a cross and in the middle of the movie. So it's very Christian in its theme, in what it's in part of the story. Now, this movie, it's not quite so blatant, but I still see some things in this film that point towards Christianity.
Well, there was the old, we thought they were dead, but they weren't dead.
No, they were dead in the Transformers movie, the previous Transformer movie.
No, but I mean in this
dead.
One where we thought they'd blown
oh, right,
up
yes.
on the ship. So going, whoa, didn't see that one coming. They yeah. weren't even on the ship. Jumping Jiminy.
They didn't get on the ship.
Oh, my boy. Yeah. That just had me on the edge of my
seat. Yeah, see, now that's one of the criticisms of Michael. But he does these snap cuts where he's like, he'll cut two scenes together that are like 20 minutes apart and they look like they've just happened right next to each other. And they don't make sense. And so it's like hard for your mind to actually get a hold of what's going on. And I think he uses that in this movie to confuse you so you don't notice that, hey, they did get on that ship and they did get blown up. Why are they here? Well, he's done all these cuts and stuff in the middle, so you're all confused, and you'll give it to him in the end because it doesn't make sense.
I didn't believe for a second that they had really gotten on that ship, but the fact that Michael Bay was directing me helped me.
Right, I knew. Of course, you know they're not on the ship. You know that when it blows up, you know they're okay.
What are they going to do? Kill the whole franchise and not make movie 4 of Transformers?
Exactly.
How dumb do we think Michael Bay is?
I'm not even going to answer that question, actually.
How about you, Paul? How dumb do you think Michael Bay is?
I think I've made my feelings on Michael Bay pretty clear.
Yeah, none of us want to go too far with that. Yeah. So
see, it is more fun to massacre the movies and say good things about them.
It sure is. But,
and,
you know,
you even liked this one, and I thought it was okay, and we're still massacring.
Right, because it's just fun. There's not a lot there, but it was a fun movie to watch, though, in the theater.
And that's fine. If it's fun, a movie should either entertain or have a message. Now, when a movie is not entertaining and doesn't have a message either, then it makes me a very sad panda.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah. Me too. I mean, I like movies that have messages. And I think that most of the movies that are entertaining do have messages, whether or not, you know, you go in knowing it. And this is a movie where, again, I think there is something to offer us as Christians. And even people that aren't Christians, there is a message there. Whether it was totally intentional or not, it still comes through. Because I think that we were created by God. And in the creations that we make, we reflect God. And I think one of the ways we reflect God is we tell stories about Christ. Whether we intend to or not. I think that's my belief. Now, here in the Transformers, you already mentioned that the Transformers are blown up. We think they're dead, but they come back. Okay, so I actually didn't even have that down because it was so obvious that they weren't killed. But you could sort of take that as a pseudo death and resurrection. But here in this film, the Decepticons are the bad guys running free and are destroying everything. It shows how much we need a savior. We need to be saved from the bad, the evil, because when we reject God, which would be, in a sense, Christ, in a sense, the Transformers completely, we're lost. We need a savior.
We are lost without God, but we'll be found by God when we return from this break. Site without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
When the truth is found to be
film critic Mark Boopian. Mark's wrapping up things on Transformers, and it's more than meets the eye.
Yes, I guess it is. Oh my gosh, Bob, you knew the tagline.
Yeah, well, there's my little vice.
So, again, what I was saying about Transformers before the break is that I kind of view the ending sequence as though it's the world that we would have without God. Total chaos, total evil reigning without us being able to do anything to stop it. We can't save ourselves. We need a savior. Our own deeds are inaccurate. Just like trying to fight giant robots. We can't fight giant robots. They're giant robots. We can't beat them.
I can never fight those things.
Yes, right. So
it's futile from the beginning.
We need a savior for salvation. So now, all right. So maybe I'm reading a little too much into this. Who knows if they really meant that or not, but I think there are aspects of that in the film. But
well, I like what you say about us being made in God's image, so that even a haphazard director like Michael Bay, who seems motivated by profit, can slap a bunch of special effects and a pseudo story together. And yet, since he's made in the image of God, a message could still come through.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, let's take a good movie. Now, the problem with Transformers is the story's not very good, but like I said, I liked it because, you know, I go in to see a bunch of giant robots fighting each other, and that's what I got.
If that's what you're going to see, you will not be disappointed.
Yeah, and I liked it, and again, seeing it
is... We were all little kids. Kids just love robots. Yeah, male kids do, at least. Guys, I loved robots when I was a kid.
Right, so. And, you know, and you even kind of like the robots themselves in this movie. But so they're... Another movie that this summer, The Cowboys and Aliens, which just came out this week. This is a movie that had some very rich Christian imagery in it. And I was very surprised, very satisfying film overall.
This was Harrison Ford starring, correct?
Harrison Ford. Daniel Craig is technically the star. That's James Bond.
That's right. The latest James Bond was
it. But Harrison Ford is also, you know, the cast member. Olivia Munn is the female lead. Olivia Wilde. I always confuse those two. I'm making...
Well, because when you're younger, you are wilder.
So. Yeah, right. Olivia Wilde. Well, they're just both famous for different reasons. But this film is just... I just thought it was a really well-told story. Now, for a lot of the movie, you don't know what's going on, and I really like that aspect of the film. It's the mysterious element... And it's told, the story is told well enough that you're engaged. You want to know what's going on. You want
you
to know.
You mean you don't even know that it's aliens? That you don't know what's going
well,
on?
Well, it's called Cowboys and Aliens, so you really probably, do kind of know up
front.
Plus,
they show you that. the way they preview things these days drives me bonkers.
Right, and I didn't watch any preview.
Because it erases
of this
all the subtleties from earlier in the movie.
I mean, the movie opens with a cowboy, and he's got this device attached to his arm that's Daniel Craig. And so you know the device is a piece of alien technology. So you do know there's aliens involved from the get-go. But he can't remember who he is, how he got there, what he's doing there. Is he an alien or not?
Intriguing.
So it is a very intriguing film. It's very well done. And it has some of the funny, like, cliche moments. Like the support your local sheriff thing where the snot-nosed kid comes into town and flies off the handle, and the sheriff arrests him and throws him in jail. He's like, wait till my dad gets here and takes care
you
of you.
Wait till my pappy and brothers find out you had me in here, boy.
Word for word, that's exactly. Harrison Ford is the dad. He's rising. I'm going to get my son out of here. You know, you better watch out. So it's actually kind of funny in that way because it plays to the cliche.
You got to love the Western. That's probably the only kind of movie where they have the cliches, and I'm never surprised. And for some reason, in a Western... It still works.
It still works. And it worked. And it was well done. And seeing Harrison Ford also as a bad guy, because he's sort of the bad guy.
Oh.
Yeah, he's not he's the mean dad, you know? So
he's a bad guy, but he's also a good guy at the same time.
Right. They walk the line.
Kind of the way Gene Hackman walks the line between good guy, bad guy, gray guy, kind of.
Yeah, and in that way. I mean, he definitely is the gray area guy, and he's tough and But at the beginning, you know, he is the bad guy at the very opening because he is the dad writing in, and then you see his character sort of not necessarily soften, I would say, but you see more aspects to his character as the movie progresses, and that's one of the things that Transformers would never be able to do: develop subtlety in character. That, you know, it would just be that he charges in and he's the mean dad and that's it.
And they did it in such a way to where you believe that part of his character was already there. They didn't just throw it in just for the sake of the movie. It was part of the character from the get-go.
They foreshadowed it early on.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. It worked very well because it's developed slowly enough and you do see things come out. And he's still kind of the gruff old guy throughout the movie, but you do see the depth of his character, and I think that's one of the great things about it. The Daniel Craig, you know, he actually kind of maintains what you see is what you get from the beginning to the end is sort of how I felt about his character. The real subtleties were in Harrison Ford's, but there's still a good character and still a really, really well-told story. And Jon Favreau is the director. He directed the Iron Man movies, and I was actually bummed to see him move on from Iron Man because I really liked what he was doing with Iron Man, but this movie was very, very well done. And Iron Man's next movie is going to be The Avengers, so there's not another Iron Man movie on the docket yet. So Jon Favreau, obviously, he had some time. This is the movie that he's going to do. He picked a very good movie. And the movie plays as a one-off. So it's from a comic book, but it doesn't play as though it's a long, you know, oh, he's created these new characters and we're going to see them in a bunch of future episodes. No, it plays as just a single individual story.
Self-contained.
Yeah, and so I really like that aspect because I was expecting to see sort of an origin story where they're just starting out and we're going to see more of them later. That's not what I got. I got a beginning, middle, and end.
So it sounds like you are recommending this
movie. Yes, very much so.
Now, Medved only gave it 2 out of 4 stars. How many would you give it? I know you're not into stars.
Oh, Michael Medved. Oh,
I know you're not a star person, but if you had to, how many stars would you give this movie?
I'd give it 4.5 at least.
Really?
You know, it's hard for me to... Wow. I just saw it. You know, I like to think about things for a long time before I really make a commitment. But and I don't think... I think how much a movie stays with you over time is really how you feel about it.
I can vouch for that because I can tell you that Mark liked Phantom Menace when he first saw it. And then a couple years later,
right,
he was hating it. He says, I'm starting to like it less on every show.
Yeah.
I guess the Jar Jar Binks scenes just kind of stick
start
out like pickled herring
you
after a while.
Yeah.
Okay, Misa, be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show with film critic Mark Boubian. We'll be right back.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's daily blog on townhall.com. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. BobSiegel.net. We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
I am here with film critic Mark Boubian, and we're in the middle of discussing Cowboys and Aliens.
That's right. Thanks, Bob. So now, the Christianity element to this movie, like I said in the beginning, is a very rich movie when it comes to Christian imagery, theme, elements throughout. For example, the movie starts with Daniel Craig, and the first person he basically meets is a preacher. Now, generally speaking, Hollywood just does not do preachers well.
All preachers are psychopaths and murderers and
yeah, that's
in
sort
Hollywood
of the
usually. Yeah.
Cliche, right? Okay, but this preacher is great. He's a preacher. And you know what? I believe him. And some of the things he says, I go, you know what? I should think about that. Is that really biblically accurate? I think it is. And he comes across as a very good character. And the other thing I like about him is he was played by Clancy Brown, who, Bob, I'm sure you know as Mr. Krabs from SpongeBob SquarePants, the cartoon.
I have never watched that.
Oh, come on. I'm shocked, Bob, that
yeah,
you've never seen SpongeBob.
And I hope they carve that on my tombstone that I've never watched that because I'm very proud of it.
If I achieved
nothing else in life, they could note me for that.
He's this gigantic guy. He's this huge, imposing figure, and he usually plays a villain. He was... Initially, the first time I ever saw him in a movie, he played the Kurgan in the movie Highlander. He's the villain in Highlander. He's this big, huge, terribly imposing figure. Scares the daylights out of me just to think back at him. He's just and he overplayed it. But it worked in that movie. And speaking of Highlander, that's another movie with some really good Christian reference to it. Not necessarily a Christian theme, but some good Christian references. But he's awesome in that movie, and I think it was the Green Mile, where he plays one of the guards, and he's the evil guard who beats up the prisoners, and he's gigantic and again imposing. So here's a little change for him, and it's just fun to see him play different characters because he's a really, really good actor, and in SpongeBob SquarePants he's insanely funny. So to go from this terrible, scary guy to this very silly, stupid, funny guy to this very measured and calculated preacher, just a great actor. He deserves a lot of accolades, which, because he plays secondary characters, he doesn't get. So I'm trying to give him as much as I can right now. One of the lines in the movie is that he gives is, God doesn't care who you are, who you were. I'm sorry. Now, see, I can't even deliver the line right. God does not care about who you were, but who you are.
Well, that's a very biblical idea.
Yeah, see, I think that's a very good line.
It's not
line.
A scripture quote, but it's certainly a paraphrase of the main message of the Bible.
Some of the art, right. So that shows you, and there's a few other lines like that, but that was one of the better lines. And so I really like that aspect of him. Another thing that happened in the movie, not with the preacher, but there's a line in the movie that you hear in every, all the time, he's in a better place. I hear that all, somebody dies, he's in a better place. And it never means anything to me because the person who's always saying it is like, yeah, 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 he's in a better place.
Well, it doesn't take away from the pain we're feeling.
Right. It doesn't mean anything. There's no, and typically in a film or a movie, when the person says it, it's that they want there to be a better place, but the movie has never, the character who says it has never ever expressed any sense that there is a better place, that there is a heaven, that there is a God, that there is a Christ. None of those things come out. And when you hear that line, it's really just an empty, meaningless line.
I mean, it is nice to have a hope that somebody is in a better place. Hopefully.
Right. That's the only reason they're saying
but
it.
The hope is good, but it doesn't take away from the fact that God had never intended for human beings to die. If we hadn't turned from God as a species to sin, we never would have died at all. So there's even Jesus wept when his friend Lazarus died. Even when Jesus was about to raise him to life 5 minutes later, there was still something about seeing man die that made even Jesus cry,
right,
despite the hope of the resurrection.
And but the point I'm making, that's a very good point. That's a little different than what I was saying. But the point I'm making is without Jesus, there is no resurrection. And typically when people are saying that line, they wish, they're hoping, but they
say
wouldn't.
It, but they're not even thinking about
Jesus. They're not
Jesus.
Thinking about Christ.
It's just, yeah, it's wishful thinking.
Okay,
yeah.
So in this movie, the line's delivered just like it's always delivered, and things go on. But the scene is framed a certain way where it's very clear that the director meant a real better place. So the cowboy is on, one of them's on a horse, one of them's standing, and, you know, delivers the line. And in the frame, they're standing in front of a church, and in the top right of the frame that you see them standing in is a cross, the church's cross. So the line is delivered, she's gone to a better place, and there's the cross right there, very deliberately placed in the frame. The only other thing you see besides the two characters is the cross. And so she's in a better place means something in this film. That's what I take away from it.
So it wasn't the cliche.
It wasn't the cliche. It's sort of like I brought up that the Christianity did play a role in the movie Brokeback Mountain. And one of the reasons I bring that up is because there's a scene where there's a cross. These people are dirt poor. The parents of one of the main characters, they're dirt poor. They can't afford anything. Their room is a table. And the walls are bare except for a cross. And one of the moments in the film is framed where the woman delivers a line, and right behind her, over her, you know, right ear is the cross. And it's very deliberately placed that way so that it's communicating to you that this person is a believer, is a Christian. That's one through imagery. That's one of the ways the movies work. It's a visual medium, so that's the director using the visual element to communicate something. And I think in this film, this was communicated. And I really like that this cliche line that you hear all the time finally gets its due, really.
And it's by a director who puts real meaning into it.
Yeah, he did. And I don't know if he's a believer or not. I don't care. But that it was there is what matters to me, that it showed up in the film, and I thought that it conveys... the meaning that it should convey. That's what matters to me.
Okay, now in the few minutes we have left, I'll give you a choice. Do you have more to say about Cowboys and Aliens, or do you want to move on to Captain America?
I can just say really quickly, we also have what I typically see in films, the Christ figure. There's a death and resurrection sequence, and the resurrected person does saves the day, so to speak. One of the people that saves the day, multiple people do, but one of the key elements to saving the day. Captain America The First Avenger, it's actually predicated entirely upon the notion of death and resurrection.
Oh, really? So very much Christian symbolism.
Yes. The whole existence of Captain America is death and resurrection.
Paul, you saw Captain America twice?
Loved it. Highly, highly recommend
Captain
America.
Did you love it as much as Paul, Mark?
I recommend it. I didn't like it as much as Paul, but I liked it enough to highly recommend it as well.
Okay. Well, I wish we had more time to hear more about it, but some good movies to go and see, and Mark will have you on again really soon. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. We will see you next week. I've been beginning a discussion the last couple of weeks on Bible contradictions. I did not continue that this week, so I wanted to give the time to Mark. We will continue that next week. What do you say to somebody who claims that the Bible contradicts itself? You are always welcome. Your questions are welcome, too.
Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.